Okay, boys, it's time to rebrand the podcast.
Oh, holy. You want to rename Negan and the Lone Ranger? Are you still getting people accusing us of being racist? A lot of people think it's funny.
Yeah, lots of people keep telling me the name is racist. But no, in this instance, we need to rebrand to get in on the 100% Canadian marketing trend. You know, like with U.S. threatening tariffs and everybody scrambling to boycott American products, there's a real rush on to make sure consumers know which goods and services are 100% Canuck.
Oh, I get it. Okay, that's a good idea. Well, both you and I are Canadian.
Not.
Yeah, and we produce the podcast here in Canada's windiest city, Winnipeg.
Not.
And we work for a Canadian newspaper, the Winnipeg Free Press.
Lads, you know that in addition to being a proud Canadian citizen, I'm also a citizen of both the United Kingdom and the Republic of Ireland, right? I mean, I've lived in Canada for over a decade now, and I'm married to a Canadian. And as the PM once said, a Canadian is a Canadian is a Canadian. But I don't know if I fully count toward the CanCon quota. What should we do?
Oh, it's okay. I got this. We'll just market ourselves as a podcast containing 98.5% Canadian contact guaranteed. And then somewhere buried in the fine print, we'll say may contain traces of UK or EU.
Yeah, that should work. Totally.
I hate trade wars.
The Winnipeg Free Press proudly presents, in partnership with CJNU 93.7 FM, Negan and the Lone Ranger. Here are your hosts, Negan Sinclair and Dan the Lone Ranger Lett.
Bonjour, Tansé. Hello, bonjour. Welcome to another episode of Negan and the Lone Ranger.
We're back to Negan and the Lone Ranger. I thought
it's much better this way.
It was Negan for 1 week.
I took a poll. I had a focus group. Much better this way.
Is it the same focus group who told you that the name wasn't racist?
Those are all people who can get a joke, and they understand that this is satire. What we're talking about isn't often satire, but
the name is satirical.
We are a show that doesn't take ourselves too seriously. But this week's topic is very serious because we're going to talk a little bit about election. We've got an election happening right next door in Ontario. Here in Manitoba, I feel like we just finished an election, even though we're a year and some in. And but a federal election coming up, big changes happening. For those of you that are living in a cave, Justin Trudeau announced,
and God bless for still having Wi-Fi and listening to the podcast.
If you're living in a cave, actually, you should probably stay there because
it's the only safe place left.
It's not pretty out here, but. Justin Trudeau announces on January 6th he's stepping down as Liberal leader. That sparks an election, which will spark another election. So the election of the Liberal leader, which is now taking place, voting is happening now. That's one of the topics we're going to talk a little bit about today with our special guest. And then, of course, the forthcoming dooming, soon to happen, maybe later in the fall, maybe right away, federal election.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a nutshell, again, you mentioned that we're going to talk to Curtis Brown from Frobe Research about this and talk about some brand new numbers that he has for Manitoba. In a nutshell, the elevator pitch on the mini series that will be based on what's happening in Canadian politics right now is 6 weeks ago, the Federal Conservative Party was 26 to 30 points ahead of the Liberals. They were cratering. And in the last 6 weeks, Trudeau steps down. Trump gets inaugurated, decides to use the rest of the world as his chew toy. And and the end result is that domestic politics in Canada has been turned on its head. And so now, like just as we're recording this podcast – a couple of polls, including a Leger poll, just came out and suggested that for the first time, the Liberals and the Tories are essentially in a statistical dead heat, which is,
unheard of a few weeks ago. Almost overnight, though, and I think the polls are always full of errors, full of assumptions, full of sample sizes that are sometimes problematic, but polls do show trends, and undoubtedly, every single poll shows a trend that A, when Justin Trudeau resigned, it was almost a complete 10-point difference, that the major thrust of the conservative platform is we're not Justin Trudeau and Justin Trudeau is awful. And so that's been gutted. So conservative support, while it has stayed fairly bedrock, it's actually been gained mostly from the NDP, the bottoming out of the NDP, people coming back to the Liberal Party over Justin Trudeau's resignation. But of course, you cannot in any way, I don't even know how you would estimate a Trump factor in this federal election. It's almost, I mean, can you even conceive of another federal election in any time in history where it has been exclusively about something outside of the country?
I mean, not domestic politics in another country, but I mean, there are some people, and I do put some credibility in this, that are looking at the bump that the Trudeau Liberals got when COVID hit. So, you know, they were not particularly popular. They did gain kind of, and we talk about this with Curtis later, a wartime bump, you know, existential threat usually dampens people's enthusiasm for changing governments. You know, it's... And I think there are a lot of examples actually of like George W. Bush, you know, the war against terrorism, the invasion of Iraq, you know, these things had enormous and profound impacts on U.S. politics at the time. I don't think Canada has had any experiences like this. We do have a couple of parallels with parties dumping old unpopular leaders and getting new leaders, governing parties trying to save themselves. And there have been bumps, not as big as this one. But in the end, I think the important lesson there and what makes what's happening now potentially historic is in those other instances, it did not save the unpopular governing party. So yeah, we're certainly potentially on the verge of something historic.
If the trends show accurately that they are in a heat, the Liberal vote is overwhelmingly more efficient than the Conservative vote. And so in that case scenario, it would look positively for the Liberals that there would be a possibility of maybe a Liberal minority. Dare I say it? Is that in the realm? Could you even have imagined that?
Well, no, I don't think you can imagine that. But here, you want irony? Like a little irony is good for every podcast.
Well, occasionally, you know? Yes.
Okay, so.
Just not with the name.
So as you well know, Mr. Polyev has not accepted our frequent invitations to appear on the podcast. No Negan and the Lone Ranger bump for Mr. Polyev. But no. But more importantly, more seriously.
That would be the tipping point for sure.
Seriously. The irony is that lefty pinko commie columnists and opinion writers like myself, I'm borrowing the language of my readers.
A handful of them.
Yeah. Not so much. More than a handful. Is that we've been telling the conservatives that if they continue to sound this shrill, anti-Trudeau, anti-liberal, anti-carbon, that they would run out of runway. They would run out of things to say at a certain point in time. And they'd run the risk of either alienating people with their completely unrealistic hyperbole, and really the inherent, what's the word I'm looking for here? The misinformation that they use and the way they bend and, you know, exaggerate things, that at a certain point in time, they do run some risk that it's going to start turning people off. And I don't think anybody could have anticipated these circumstances. That having been said, that is the conservative challenge right now, is that, you know, you've got a guy who, like, basically, you know, tossed Justin Trudeau around like a beanie baby and used and abused his brand to build his own lead. And now what's he left with? A warehouse full of Axe the Tax t-shirts.
I was going to say.
You know, and
a whole lot of slogans.
Yeah.
About 50% of them have to do with Trudeau. And the problem is that you've got this a platform which is mostly based on tear it down or Canada's broken or we're going to axe this and that. The problem is that when you've got this existential threat of Donald Trump, you need to have at least a plan. And one thing that the Conservatives have really stumbled on is proposing a plan, proposing any sort of idea that will counter Trump. And this has left space for all of, arguably all of the Liberal leadership hopefuls, but particularly Mark Carney. I mean, you could not have set up the deck better for Mark Carney in this situation. Former banker, has dealt with major financial crises throughout the world, but then in particular comes to a point in which he's possibly pulling the Liberal Party to a more centrist position where they have really occupied the space that the NDP typically.
More of a Cretchen Liberal sort of positioning.
And yeah. And interestingly enough, if the polls are showing accurately that Carney, by occupying the center, is still pulling from the left. Mm-hmm. That people, the Trump factor, I think, is significant here, but that he's able to pull in the people from the left and then regain an occupying sort of central position within the political spectrum. That has led to a statistical tie that I think will be fascinating to watch. If the election, it almost suggests that the Liberals' best time to go is almost immediately.
Already there are observations being made that the Conservatives, who were desperate to force an election, who assailed the Liberals and Trudeau for proroguing Parliament to give the Liberals time to elect a new leader, that he would petition – well, there was a court case, a legal challenge against the prorogation – that he would somehow petition the Governor General to recall Parliament – you know, not only to debate, response to what the Americans are doing right now, but also to, you know, to give them a chance of, toppling the government. And that, like, that is gone from the Liberal talk track right now. I mean, I don't, this is not conservatives, like, this is not conservative, official conservative voices saying this, but there are conservative opinion writers saying, you know,
maybe we should
wait. Election be okay.
I was going to say, maybe we should wait. And, you know, Ipsos released a poll just recently where 86% of Canadians also want an election. So if, let's say, Carney or Freeland, but likely Carney, gets in, calls an election, that actually is a favorable turn towards Canadians that will gain favor. All the things seem to be pointing to an election happening fairly soon. And for those of you in Ontario who listen to us, we apologize because you're voting literally right now. All the Liberals in the country are voting right now and will then head to the federal polls.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, you know, an election in Canada's most populous province should provide some interesting intel on where people are at. I mean, I think everybody knows Doug Ford's going to win.
Who has so little to do with the federal Conservatives. It's a almost like, would a vote for Doug Ford be more about the Liberals or would it be more about the Conservatives?
Well, no, it's no, what the, a vote for Doug Ford in Ontario is, a vote for an incumbent government and you don't change governments during existential threats. But I also have to say, if he does win, part of it is going to be Bonnie Crombie and the Liberals have not run a great campaign.
No, well, and, but they, Donald Trump has sucked the complete oxygen out of that entire campaign. Well, like, do they talk about anything else? Is there anything else to talk about?
No, have you seen Doug Ford at campaign events? Like, he's wearing these, like, Made in Canada t-shirts and stuff. And honestly, like, it, you know what it reminded me of is we bought appliances from an appliance. I'm not going to give them free advertising, but it was like the blah, blah, blah Canadian appliance warehouse or whatever. And when you go into their stores, they're all wearing these like red t-shirts with maple leaves on them. It looked like he was moonlighting at Canadian appliance warehouse. Like it was a preposterous, sight. And they're so desperate to defend and represent Canada. You know, honestly, I don't know, Adam, is he the guy we want to represent Canada?
I don't know, but it seems right now that it's weird that Doug Ford is coming out of all of this as being a great statesman, and everyone seems to be like, yeah, right on, keep defending the honor. And then there are folks who are also claiming that this is an interesting time for Canadians to reclaim patriotism as something that is not just right or left politically.
So let's press the reality button here, in that when you step into that patriotic space, you come to the whole lot of other things.
This is true.
And I was just in Thunder Bay just a few moments ago, just got back. All anyone is talking about in terms of the election is, when you press the patriotic button, you then step into the space of resource development. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that, Drew, with our special guest. But the critical thing to understand here is that when Doug Ford then starts to say, we need to move forward as a country, we need to build an economy, which oddly happened during the Liberal leadership debate as well, suddenly it's all about lands and resources. And guess who shows up again? It's Indigenous people.
Aha!
And that is something Justin Trudeau has put all of his chips in the middle to really try to solve, try to engage. And it's interesting now that we're going to have both provincial and federal leaders who, on the move towards patriotism, have immediately faced the shadow, the reaper of history, the specter of history, which is that Canada's never dealt with this issue.
Mm-hmm. No, not adequately. And we're going to talk some more about that after the feature interview. Curtis Brown's a principal with Probe Research, the official pollster of the Winnipeg Free Press. And the NHL. No, just the Winnipeg Free Press.
Other pollsters are, of course, available, but we like this one.
We like these guys. And he's going to break some news on the Negan and the Lone Ranger podcast. So let's go to that interview now. Curtis, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So I'd start with the first question I ask everybody in these tumultuous times, it seems. What the hell is going on?
I wish I knew. If someone could pay me to have that answer, it would be great. It seems to change by the day and by the hour. But there's a lot going on. And yeah, we don't really seem to know what's happening in the U.S. or what's happening worldwide. And there's lots of things are in a state of flux right now. So it makes, what I do super interesting and a lot of fun. So
me as well.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you a précis of what's happening. Not that I understand why it's happening, but 6 weeks ago, the Conservative Party of Canada was very clearly headed to a massive, possibly historic majority mandate in the next election, which we think will probably start near the beginning of April. Mm-hmm. Based on the deadline for returning Parliament from prorogation and the expected motion or vote of non-confidence that's going to take place. And in the 6 weeks, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau decided to step down. Finally, U.S. President Donald Trump was inaugurated and unleashed a version of Trump that not even his detractors could have imagined, which has triggered a national outpouring of nationalism. Even in Quebec, it is, it's so much nationalism coursing through the veins of Canadians that the separatist movement is afraid now to hold another referendum vote. So there's low-hanging fruit on this. But, once again, I'll sort of say, what the hell is going on? I was trying to remember if I've ever seen a 26-point lead evaporate, even over an election period where there's a lot of movement in the poll. Have we ever seen anything like this?
The only thing that really comes to mind immediately is 1993, right? So Brian Mulroney, similar situation, very unpopular. People are fed up with him. People are fed up with his government. He steps down. Kim Campbell is chosen and is seen for a moment as a breath of fresh air. And the PCs, I think it's forgotten considering, what happened in that election ultimately. But yeah, there was a moment in the spring, summer of 1993 when it looked like maybe the PCs would be able to rise from the dead with a new leader and a fresh face and Canada's first female prime minister, et cetera, et cetera. And then when the campaign actually, actually happened, it went the other way, of course. The PCs were routed down to two seats.
Yeah.
The conservative movement in Canada splintered into, the Bloc in Quebec, the Reform Party in the West. The Liberals were the beneficiaries of a lot of vote splitting, especially in Ontario and some parts of Western Canada, and they won a majority government. Because in the end, they were able to, pull a pretty significant lead after the PC number kind of went up and then it cratered. We might potentially be at the sort of going up part. And I guess the question will be, when an election comes, is it going to be, will the Liberals suddenly the air get deflated out of the Liberal balloon?
Yeah.
Or will they stay there? But I think, if you're a conservative and you were kind of coasting along to, with the expectation that your party was going to be winning a massive, massive, majority, I think you're probably chewing on, Rolaids like candy right now.
Yeah. So let's talk about, how to read the polls.
Yeah.
Because it's something you and I, we love talking about this stuff, and it's why our partners don't like taking us to dinner parties, because we bore people with details about aggregates and weighting. Yeah. But seriously, so there's two main sources of polling information right now. There is the daily, what almost seems to be daily release of new polling data.
Yeah.
From, and there's probably 7 or 8 major sources of new polling data coming out daily.
Yeah.
And then there's the aggregators.
Yeah.
So they're, Eric Grenier, The Writ, he does a great polling aggregator.
Yeah.
CBC, I think, borrows a lot of what he does for their polling aggregator, 338.com.
Yeah.
Okay. So when people look at those two sources, though, they're going to see very different numbers. So kind of explain to me how do we explain the difference between what's in the poll aggregators and what's in the daily poll information?
Yeah. So the daily poll, the cliche always is a poll is a snapshot in time, right? So one poll, can say, one thing, and then another poll done with a similar, similar sample of the population, can come out with a pretty similar result. It might be a little bit different. And, sometimes what ends up happening is people will kind of see one or the other and go, oh my God, like the Liberals are up 2 or the Conservatives are up 3 or, that sort of thing. And they'll kind of look at that and, sometimes people kind of hang on their hat on, whichever particular poll result they happen to like. But what ends up happening, what the aggregators do is they kind of take that and then they look at those over time. They average them. They each of them kind of has their own kind of secret sauce in terms of how they
usually 30 days, but it can be longer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically a mathematical model, and each of them kind of have their own slightly different way of doing it, but that's kind of their secret sauce. But essentially what they're doing is they're taking the input as all of those polls that are being released, and they're putting that into a model showing like this is what the average is. Sometimes they weight, sometimes they'll weight ones more than the other based on, the pollster's track record of being right, or the dates they're in field, or the methodology. Cause like a lot of surveys are either online panel, or there's some that use IVR, they're also sometimes called robocalls or live. A few still use kind of live, actually like live human beings phoning people, but that's increasingly rare. Anyway, they'll take all that and then they'll come out with a model. And that model, what they'll try to do quite often, and this is sometimes where it gets a little bit dicey, is they'll kind of try to take that down to even the individual riding level to sort of say, like, based on if an election was held right now, here's what the results would be. And they're looking at, like, in those polls and taking all those things together, all that data, they're looking at, like, different things like, regional differences, gender differences, some of those sorts of things. And like, Eric Grenier is a really good example, and I think is pretty responsible in terms of how he does it, is basically taking like a range, sort of saying like based on what all the polls are saying, all this data that I've inputted into my model, the Conservatives could be between 180 and 210 seats, and the Liberals will be between 140 and 160, and those ranges change based on as old old data kind of get flushes out of the model, new polls come in. That's how those work essentially.
Yeah. So in the current context, people who are looking at daily news results and longer-term aggregations are going to see, and correct me if I'm wrong, but they're going to see the most recent daily news results are going to show almost a dead heat between the Liberals and the Conservatives. Over a longer period of time, those older polls are going to kind of, show, they're going to produce a spread, a lead for the Conservatives. Mm-hmm. that is anywhere, like looking this morning, like from 15 points, you know, maybe to 7 or 8 points.
Yeah.
But with, you know, and again, you're the expert, but with every new poll that we have that shows a tightening race.
Yeah.
Then that those spreads on the aggregation models get smaller.
Yeah, that should be the case unless something changes. And then, all of a sudden, if the liberal number starts going down and the conservatives go back up, you know, they'll have that. But yeah, essentially that is how it works, is that, you get these new polls kind of coming in. Those are new inputs going into it. And then that's used to feed the model. So, you know, there is some stuff that'll be older polling that's, that would be kind of in there, that look at that average. And I'm also pleased to share with you today, if you're interested.
Well, I was just going to ask, because you teased me with real news.
Yeah.
Can we insert the teletype machine sound?
Bet I can.
Yeah. Okay. We have breaking news here at the Negan and the Lone Ranger podcast. We have very recent results. Federal party standings in Manitoba.
Yeah. So this is the sweep of the sound. Okay, great. This is a survey that we did in the last couple of weeks. This is a Negan and their Lone Ranger exclusive. Happy to share.
Yeah.
But what we found is, like, what we're finding in our polling mirrors what we're seeing nationally. So a couple caveats about this poll. I just want to make that very clear. We have a quarterly omnibus survey that we're very proud to partner with the Free Press, and that's kind of the tracking provincial federal numbers. This is outside of that. So the sample size is a little bit smaller and the sample is a little bit different. This is just an online panel. We use a mixed method for that other larger survey that we sort of run more regularly through the year. So this is 600 people done completely online. It was in field February 3rd to 6th. So it's a couple weeks old now, but right at the beginning of February, kind of when we started to see some of this shift. And the conservatives are still ahead province wide, but their lead has dropped substantially compared to where we were at in December. And the liberal number has shot up. So as of this poll, 45% conservative. It was 52 in the survey that we did for the Free Press in December. The liberal number is now 28% province wide. It was 19. So the liberals were in third provincially. Now they're in second. The NDP number has gone down. It's slightly lower than it was in December. It's 22%. It was 24. And almost all of this, I mean, there's been a little bit of uptick, but, you know, this is very much driven by Winnipeg. So in our last poll in December, liberals were in third place in the city, 24%. They're now tied for the conservatives, essentially. They're at 35 in first. Conservative number was 43% in December. It's now 34. So there's been a pretty significant swing within Winnipeg. Again, just one poll. It's not like, you know, we're talking about aggregators and all that, smaller sample size. So it's a little noisier in terms of what's happening. But basically the NDP number, it's interesting, is the federal polls show the NDP numbers have dropped, but in ours, it's actually stayed relatively, it's gone down a tiny bit, but it's relatively flat. But this was people who were kind of parked with the conservatives and now seem to be giving the liberals another chance again.
And it this is where the most sage advice that a pollster ever gave me was to worry less about the specific numbers and more about the trend lines.
Yeah.
Look for trends that are established over a period of time.
Yeah.
So there really isn't a doubt that the trend shows a decline in support for the conservatives and an increase in support for the liberals. The question of why, is quite fascinating.
Yeah.
Certainly, taking Trudeau off the board was huge.
Yeah.
It's funny, if he had, I guess only history will show, if he had done it sooner, would it have made a bigger difference? It's hard to imagine a bigger difference than what we're seeing right now.
Well, it's interesting because I think, that debate, I think, has happened a lot in the last year and a half or so. Like, Trudeau should have resigned last year or back in last summer or at some point. But I think that is definitely one factor, because I do think that, you know, after him being prime minister for how many years, you know, the unpopularity, that's definitely something. There was a bit of Trudeau fatigue for sure. But I think also you can't overstate what's happening within the U.S., right? And the Trump factor, and also, just what's, you know, the risk of tariffs and everything that, you know, you were saying at the beginning. I don't think, you know, people sort of, you know, expected that it would be this dire, this unexpected, in terms of just how tough that stance, the U.S. president, the U.S. government's taken on tariffs, on Canada, annexation talk, the whole nine yards that I think if you were imagining that 12 months ago, I don't know anyone who was like.
No, that's what I mean. References that even, President Trump's detractors are shocked by the extent of what he's doing. I think, though, it's kind of a reminder that there are certain macro forces when it comes to political support that are just like they withstand the test of time. And one of them is that an incumbent government, even one that's unpopular, benefits from being at war. Now, thankfully, as we're still not yet in a military conflict, but we call it a trade war because it's very much it is a war.
It's a battle, yeah, absolutely.
And if you're in power and you're addressing the nation and telling people to hold fast and stay calm and you can't underestimate the power that has in terms of political brand.
No. And I mean, same poll that we had and these results were in the Free Press recently, but, when we looked at that, in terms of the Trump threat and everything like that, that's happening. I mean, you now have 3/4 of Manitobans saying that they're making a conscious effort not to buy things from the U.S. I mean, the number of people who, say that they, are canceling or not planning on going to the U.S. to go visit it, suddenly shot up from about a third to 62%, just like that overnight because of all of a sudden this threat of, tariffs. And I mean, we saw the same thing to a certain, during COVID, right? At the beginning of COVID, I mean, I think the Trudeau Liberals had, just been, recently gone through an election at that point, weren't super popular. They were starting to take some dents, take some knocks. And yeah, in those early days, where Trudeau was doing the press conference at Rideau Cottage every day, suddenly there was a bit of an uptick of, the rally around the leader kind of thing. And that's, that's something you just kind of expect. And it's interesting now how, you have crisis, but you also have change at the same time, right? Because now all of a sudden, because I think Trudeau very much was a lightning rod for a lot of people, even a lot of kind of like soft people, traditional liberals or people who kind of flip their support back and forth. He's off the board. You have a crisis. And you also have, and the candidates who are running for that leadership are kind of talking about doing things differently or, tacking a bit of a different direction. I think a lot of those people who are kind of maybe those, quote unquote swing voters are reevaluating their choices.
Yeah. I think it's also interesting to look at the conservative side of the equation because they're not just a leaf blowing in the wind.
No.
They had done a lot of hard concerted work to build up that 26 point lead and attacking Trudeau and, portraying the Liberal government as really responsible for everything, including, cloudy days.
Yeah.
And, but so the conventional wisdom has been that the size, the magnitude of the shift in support for parties is, just as much, a repudiation, of what the conservative messaging. I wonder if it's just that was messaging that was 100% tied to Trudeau. And with Trudeau gone, suddenly that messaging just seems to be shrill. Personally, I think they've risked they're on the verge of actually being considered, being seen as immature in the way they're going about it. But is that too much to read into the poll results?
I don't know about that. Cause I mean, a couple of big caveats I think I'd have about that too is also, we still have the conservatives with a pretty, big lead province wide, right? And even though they're down, their support has gone down in Winnipeg, they're still in a pretty competitive position and they're still probably going to win the most seats in the province, even if there was if there was a federal election. The other thing is when we ask the public, you say, one of the questions we asked in this poll was, which party do you think is going to win? 2/3 said the conservatives, only 11% said the liberals. I think that, people just, and especially it's not surprising considering what a massive, such a massive lead they've had in the last year that I think, the public still think, conservative government is still very much a possibility. And it's also something we see in our numbers that, you know, it's a pretty significant proportion, even, you know, of like people who don't necessarily, you know, plan on voting conservative or who don't really have a preference, you know, that they could definitely live with having the conservatives, you know, the idea of having a conservative government. So, you know, I think it's kind of too easy to, or too early to kind of write their obituary or say that, okay, the liberals have totally resurrected themselves from the dead. But yeah, I do think that is one of the challenges I think the conservatives have, right? Is that, you know, they kind of had that messaging. So much of that messaging was tied to Trudeau and also the carbon tax specifically. And once those two things are off the table because the liberal leadership candidates are saying that they're going to get rid of the carbon tax too. It's kind of like, okay, well, what else do you have in terms of a message? And I think they've been really, you know, I mean, the carbon tax carny and trying to like, you know, say these things, you know, to sort of get through and, you know, sort of paint them all as being, you know, it's going to be just, you know, Justin Trudeau by another name. But it gets harder to make that case, and people don't necessarily, I mean, people are still forming their opinions and of who the leader is, and it's going to take some time. I think it's a little harder to just kind of be able to say that and rally that support when, yeah, there's suddenly someone new that someone's, you know, that the public's learning about. And I think they're going to probably work very hard to try to define that, define, you know, whoever the winner is and all the candidates, like as soon as they can.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the conservatives certainly have started to attack, Mark Carney. It was the presumptive front runner.
Yeah.
So they've started to reflect that, but are attacking him very much in the same tone, as the attacks that they made on Trudeau.
Yeah.
I'm interested about whether that's going to track. But it is true that if Mark Carney becomes the next leader of the Liberal Party, he is going to face a barrage of attack ads, the likes that we may never have seen in Canada. The Conservative Party is still the best funded party in Canada. They've got the money to spend, especially in a pre-writ period.
Well, and one of the things I keep thinking about is you know, whether it's Carney or someone else who win the Liberal leadership when it happens at the beginning of March is, how quickly would they want to go to an election? And I think one of the considerations would have to be the longer the pre-writ period is, the more the conservatives can spend a pile of money defining whoever that new leader, new prime minister is, right? Versus once there's an election campaign, there'll still be a lot of messaging about, you know, whatever, but the conservatives are limited in terms of how much they can spend and that fundraising advantage that they enjoy all the time. So I think that has to be something that's definitely kind of being thought about or on the table, in terms of that. I mean, the thing is, like, the conservatives are good at this, right? They did this to Stéphane Dion. I mean, I'm sure some of the clips from that debate, they're probably going to find their way into a conservative attack ad. I mean, no one said, do you think it's easy to make priorities or something like that? Like, I don't know if there's anything like that in that debate, but they did it to him. They did it with Michael Ignatieff. They tried to do it to Trudeau, and Trudeau kind of managed to pivot out of it. But that's something that I think the conservative party is very good at doing to liberal leaders.
The other thing we were talking about prior to doing the interview was just who is the target constituency for the Conservative Party? Because I'd said to you that I still found it interesting, curious that. Polyev won't do interviews with traditional media, like serious political journalists. He did do a long interview with Jordan Peterson, you know, who is this iconic figure in the far, far right of the Canadian political spectrum. You know, he continues to do interviews with really niche media where he talks about, exercising woke culture from the Federal Civil Service and canceling museum exhibits and all these other things that, you know, really, you know, are not part of an appeal to the center right of the political spectrum. But your theory was that perhaps based a lot on what the Republicans did in the United States, they may be looking for increased support from a constituency that don't respond to polls, and maybe haven't voted. much of the past.
Yeah, no, I think there's truth to that. And I think often, you know, a lot of these things end up kind of like trickling over or you know, coming into our, you know, things here in Canada that come from the U.S. And I think, you know, what I was sort of thinking about that, and Jordan Peterson in particular, is, I mean, he's very popular among young men, especially young men who don't consistently vote, don't consistently have a party preferences. Yes, it's true. Don't always do polls. Although we do our best to try to reach them. And, you know, one of the things that is interesting in this shift that we picked up, in terms of the Liberal numbers kind of coming back and the Conservatives coming down a little bit in Manitoba, is it's older people. It is older, both older men and older women, where there's been a significant jump, you know, in support, you know, from where it was in December to where it is in this poll in terms of, the Liberal number. Among actually it's 35 to 54 year olds, the Conservative numbers actually hold pretty firm. And even the younger adults, which, yeah, you know, 10 years ago, we wouldn't have said that, but there is still a pretty high number of young people who still would vote Conservative, yeah, right? And that's who, you know, and I think that's, you know, you sort of think about, like, if you're a party leader and you're trying to build a winning coalition, I mean, and if you're a Conservative, there's all these kind of different groups that you kind of appeal to. I mean, that's one that's really kind of worked in the U.S. is to try to get, yeah, younger, less engaged, you know, men in particular who maybe are kind of animated by, you know, the anti-woke culture stuff and some of these things. And, yeah, I mean, that turns off other voters, and a lot of those people might not be people who are going to vote Conservative anyway. But it is something about, you know, I think there is something about trying to, like, activate that to try to give you that edge to win. But I think in this case, yeah, the, you know, given with everything that's happening, what we're seeing is that it's the people over 55 who are now going, yeah, you know what? I was not really, you know, I was prepared to vote Conservative, but now I'm rethinking that. Now I'm maybe going back to the Liberals.
Well, and I think there's also, in conversation with Nigan, who couldn't be here today, but, you know, he made a great observation too, listening to the Liberal leadership debates this week, is that the Liberals are sending out signals, not so subtle signals, that in fact they believe that the electorate has moved to the right. Has become more small C conservative. You know, I wrote a column recently about how, you know, Chrystia Freeland and Mark Carney are both very staunchly on the side of controlling and capping immigration. You know, they don't want to fight an election on immigration and the policies of the previous government. So they're adopting a lot of the same language and even some of the same tools, yeah, as Pierre Poilievre. Nigan noted that the context for the discussion of Indigenous issues has changed, where it used to be about reconciliation and you know, social commitments to improving the standard of living, the experience of Indigenous people. Now it's about resource development and economics, which is, again, right out of Pierre Poilievre's playbook. Do you buy the idea that, are they reading the electorate as having shifted to the right? And do you think that there's some value in what they're doing?
I don't know if I would describe it as shifting to the right. I think what it is more about materialism and concern. Maybe that might not be the right word, but concern about, you know, sort of the economic issues and status and how we're, you know, how we're doing. I think, like, I mean, one of the things that we see over and over again in a lot of our polling is, yeah, people are very, very much concerned about the cost of living, right? And especially with the, you know, trade issues with the US and, you know, a lot of talk about, like, okay, well, what does this mean in terms of, like, our resources here in Canada? Who are we selling them to? You know, or is this a lot of this about the US, like, you know, trying to sort of, you know, get access to our, you know, oil, yeah, and minerals and, you know, this sort of thing? I do wonder. And I do think that maybe part of that might be what a little bit kind of what's shifting that conversation is, like, okay, if we as a country, you know, if things have kind of changed in terms of that relationship with our biggest trading partner and how that trickles down in terms of, like, the overall economy and tariffs and how that affects it. And if people are also feeling a lot of anxiety about the cost of living and their own, you know, like, what they're paying for their mortgage and housing and that kind of stuff. I think some of that, you know, that's going to change the frame a little bit in, yeah, that way. I don't know if it's necessary. I mean, it might be fair to, you know, there might be fair to say, like, okay, that maybe seems like it's a little more, like, Conservative or moving to the right, because I think that's largely what the, you know, Pierre Poilievre and the Conservatives have really been hammering on a lot over the last few years. But I think it's more just, I think in some cases it's maybe about the Liberals kind of meeting the electorate a little bit, kind of where, you know, where their big concern has been. Because I do think that for the last few years, that's been one of the criticism, is that maybe the liberals have kind of been focused more on, you know, reconciliation and DEI and, you know, some other things, that maybe some of those more material concerns maybe have, you know, they've been a little bit asleep on that. So, so I think that's kind of, I don't think that's wrong, but I think that's kind of maybe from my read of it anyway, where I can sort of see that kicking in.
They certainly are pivoting, the new leadership candidates, which is, you would expect.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, I interviewed Mark Carney recently, and he, you know, if you ask him about Justin Trudeau, like, he doesn't disparage him, but he will say, and he did say to me, like, I am not Justin Trudeau. I'm not really anything like Justin Trudeau. So, you know, they have come to bury him, not to honor him. And I also think that the Liberals, because of who they've been, have always been the party that has been in a place to make pivots more elegantly.
Yeah.
If you push yourself to one end of the spectrum, a pivot is a dangerous maneuver, because you run the risk of discouraging some of your core supporters from coming out to support you. I just really thought, you know, leading up to Flag Day, and Poilievre had promised this big Flag Day, you know, the event rally in Ottawa.
Yeah.
And, you know, liberal sources were saying, oh, yeah, you know, we're going to refine our message and pivot. And it was really just like more of the same. The ads that they run coming out of it might have been directed by Ridley Scott. There was twisted burning wreckage and death and disease. And, you know, I wonder where, like, I expect the conservatives to make some sort of a shift, additional shift.
Yeah.
In addition to attacking Carney or whoever the leader is, I just wonder what that'll be, what that shift could be.
Yeah. That's the big question, isn't it? I mean, I think at this point, you know, I think there's a recognition that they do need to make some sort of a shift. They've tried to do that. And I guess, like, I mean, the thing is, like, this is not, it's probably going to be a slow thing, because, like, we're going to be, you know, like, up until the point of the Liberal leadership, and then we get into an actual election campaign, you might start to see more of that shift kick in, if there is such a thing. But yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that the Conservatives have had to, you know, just sort of been overtaken by events in a way, and have to kind of change the playbook on the fly.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see.
And so, and your prediction is?
Oh, I'm not doing that.
Okay. I would have been disappointed if you'd actually,
if you had asked me like 10 years ago and I was a little sillier about that sort of thing, maybe, but yeah, I'm not going to make any prediction. I think, I mean, the only prediction I would say is that, you know, just based on this, and, you know, we will have another survey in March that'll kind of, you know, we'll see what the trend line looks like after that.
Right.
It is going to be probably more competitive in suburban Winnipeg than, maybe we were expecting, 6-8 weeks ago.
Well, it's I mean, neither one of us have a horse in the race.
No.
So I think you'd join me in saying that mostly what we want from a federal election is we want it to be a race.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's that's not to say that a party that is way out in front and stays way out in front and wins a big majority government doesn't deserve it. Sometimes they do deserve mandates like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, a little intrigue. You know, a little bit of a cliffhanger, you know, and the writ drops. That would be my preference.
It always makes it more, always makes it more fun for you writing columns and me doing polling, is if I come up with another poll, it just says, okay, yeah, the you know, lead has changed by 2 points or 1 point, but it's still a huge lead. It's not as interesting a story as when you have these big dips and, you know, dips and increases, right?
Well, let's hear it for, you know, ebb and flow, lots of big ebb and flow.
Exactly.
Moving forward. Curtis Brown, Probe Research, thank you. Thanks for the news.
Yeah.
The breaking news. And we will certainly check in with you before the federal election.
Sounds good.
Thanks once again to Curtis Brown of Probe Research. Very revealing insights. Big, big thanks for using the podcast to break some new polling numbers from Manitoba.
We're like the AP. We're the AP of the Associated Press of the podcast world. Now, look, just breaking.
We've been kicked out of the president's briefing. Is that why?
No, we're a podcaster. Doesn't that mean we're in?
Yeah.
He wants alternative media.
Well, I will say that right for a moment, like, I don't intend on attending the president's briefings anytime soon, but I do wonder the next time I have to refer to that big body of water that's to the left of the Florida Panhandle. Like, what am I going to call it?
Just, you know, leave it blank.
Leave it.
Just let the readers fill it in.
Just leave it. That's what I say when I'm refereeing hockey, like, you know, especially older boys, and they're doing something they shouldn't be doing. That's what I say.
Just leave it.
Leave it.
Leave it. Leave it back. One amazing, fascinating thing about the polls are suggesting, again, polls are always about sample sizes. They're about moments. They're about, you know, what does that look like? That the race in Manitoba, what once would be conceived of as a fait accompli, with the exception of the occasional riding, let's say Winnipeg Center or, I don't know, maybe, like, we'd probably say Winnipeg North would be safe. Okay, but generally,
remember, Kevin Lamoureux cannot be killed by conventional means, right?
No, I don't think anyone could ever beat Kevin Lamoureux here in Winnipeg North. But anyways, the is now neck and neck in those ridings. Let's say, for example, Assiniboia Headingley. Like, in a riding like that, traditionally, Marty Morantz and Doug Yulofson,
yeah,
just a couple dozen votes separated them, yeah, last federal election. I had to go to a court case to determine in that kind of ride. That will be fascinating to watch.
Yeah. I think the, there are people, including, the people who hold some of these liberal seats, Winnipeg South, is considered to be a bellwether riding. So that's Terry Duguid is the, now one of Manitoba's cabinet ministers and
also the national chair of the Liberal campaign.
And national chair of the Liberal campaign. I think he would be the first to admit that his, riding tends to be heavily, in lockstep with national voting trends. Winnipeg South Center, Ben Carr, MP, a little bit safer, but still not, it's not, completely unprecedented that the Tories would take that seat. I mean, there's a very real possibility that basically this becomes a stasis, vote for Manitoba, where, all the parties kind of retain their traditional, strongholds. And that, at least that's what the polls are like, with the Liberals and the Tories running neck and neck. I wouldn't say that puts the Liberals in a position of stealing seats. I think it does mean they're in very, very good shape to protect seats.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep the ones they already have. What a change of events in Manitoba. What a change of events in, you know, like, this was the place in which it was moving significantly harder, right? I mean, this is the place in which the People's Party of Canada did fairly well in Portage la Prairie, fairly well, meaning in terms of their barometer. In terms of, you know, 18% or so. So there is, in certain ridings in Manitoba, there is a real dissatisfaction, I think, with the federal government, with Justin Trudeau, with vaccines, with kind of the, we'd call it the progressive vision, mm-hmm, maybe others might call it DEI/indigenous/LGBTQ. And it seems, though, that with the Liberals deciding to maybe downplay the progressive elements within the party, yeah, that they're therefore appealing more to those who have left the Liberal Party for various different reasons. Maybe they went to the NDP. Maybe they went to the Conservatives. The general feeling is that the Liberal Party is moving more to the center and is achieving more of a support as a result.
Yeah. I mean, elections now are less about, like, you'll still hear people talk about building a big tent, but quite frankly, we're not filling the big tent with voter turnout. So elections are more about trying to motivate certain constituencies within the electorate. So if you can motivate a constituency that traditionally has low voter turnout, like Trudeau did in 2015 with younger voters, then you can upset the normal biorhythm of an election. I think that you can see what Pierre Poilievre and the Conservatives are doing now, which is probably not unlike what the Manitoba Progressive Conservatives tried in 2023, which was to motivate far right, hardline conservatives who are non-voters. So that is the, you know, or flip, like, you know, Donald Trump flipped young men, young black men, young Latino men.
Amazingly.
Yeah. So, like, I think that is the, like, it's an election is less about one big platform and one big message as it is about all kinds of micro messaging and direct messaging. I mean, they're, you know, direct marketing techniques. You know, parties are reaching out to individuals that, who they think can be flipped or cultivated as first-time voters by putting giving them specific messages that will turn them against one party, motivate them to come out. There's no doubt that when you listen to Pierre Poilievre and talk about the anti-woke this and the anti-woke that, and, you know, is that he's still, like the Manitoba PCs did in 2023, he still thinks that that's a well that can be pumped. And I after what happened in the United States,
I don't know. I think anything's possible. But yeah, one thing that is for sure is the support for conservatives is, like, I would almost call it bedrock. Like, it's unshakable. Like, the 35 or so percent, they're people that are going to vote conservative. Like, they just.
But not efficient is the point that you made.
Not efficiently. They're probably all in Alberta, rural Manitoba. And so the problem will be is that in certain constituencies, they'll do extremely well. It'll be an overwhelming victory for the conservatives because groups in those ridings are, they've decided this, I don't know, probably sometime during the pandemic, that they're never going to vote anything other than conservative because of one reason or another. It seems like the NDP liberal support is shifting and it's leaving the NDP, not for the progressive reasons. And I think that's what I'm so curious about is that as the Liberals maybe are moving towards the center. And I think one of the fascinating things that we heard during the interview was that maybe it's just the Liberals downplaying their progressive vision or their progressive commitments. And maybe they'll still keep those, but they're just not playing them up anymore. They're saying economy, like if you think about Mark Carney, economy, 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 Chrystia Freeland's like, I can fight Trump better than anybody else. What was her words during the debate? I'm the most protective mother of my children, then I will protect you as well. Mama Bear, whatever she used there.
Well, you know, I mean, go for it. You know, like it's, I think that there's no doubt. And I wrote a column recently, which talked about how everybody is going to be hard on immigration. Everybody's taking a hard line in immigration because that's quite frankly across the spectrum. That's kind of the message that people want to hear right now. You know, they've been conditioned to blame everything that's wrong with the economy on immigration. The fact is that those connections or those links are completely tenuous, bordering on erroneous. And secondly, like the program, the immigration program that the Liberals have put in right now for the next 3 years anticipates 2 years of negative population growth, of shrinkage in the country. That is going to have a huge impact. Slower growing economy, possibly recession. We're not going to be replacing retiring Canadians with younger Canadians coming into the workforce to generate all the money to support social programs and healthcare. Like it's so, but right now nobody is going to talk about that. And the other thing they're probably not going to talk about in this election is reconciliation. I mean, I think
going to add those two things you just said together because the largest employable population is Indigenous young people who are exploding. Their population is exploding.
Yeah. So my suggestion is I think we should do a drinking game during the campaign. because if the election's 35 days, we're going to do how they have dry February. We're going to be doing very wet campaign. And so for 35 days, every time a politician says reconciliation, we're going to take a drink. And you know what? By the end of the campaign, I bet you we're stone cold sober.
Jeez. We went to a dark place there. Adam, I think actually that was our appeal for a sponsor. We want to see.
You want to know something. Argument in this day and age, you can talk about drinking games all you want. You're not going to stop me, my constitutional right to talk about drinking games.
What I was going to say was. And
wait a minute. Adam was going to say.
Oh, Adam, were you?
No, I was just going to say, please drink responsibly.
Oh, my God. Okay. Have you noticed one word that has been missing from both Pierre Poilievre's mouth and also from the Liberal leadership campaign as a whole? And it was pointed out during the debate. It was this kind of side thing. It was like very quick. It was quickly handled or ignored, or everyone just changed. Drill, baby, drill from Trump to build, baby, build. Housing.
Yeah, which was such a big issue 6 weeks ago.
Not the only issue that was multiple social media campaigns by the conservatives? And now we've got a banker who's likely going to take over the Liberals. He's saying build, baby, build. That's, he actually says that. That's his, that's his, maybe the birth of his first meme or his first catchphrase. And now suddenly housing isn't the thing anymore, or it isn't the main issue anymore?
I'm not exactly, because, you know, it's funny that the conservatives continue to try and bathe or baste Carney and Freeland in the entrails of the carbon tax, which has mostly been taken off the table. It's not in play anymore. And, but really, you know, I suppose the issue that where the Liberals are still vulnerable. Now, parenthetically, reality check, the reality check sign is flashing on and on here. The impact that the federal government has on the housing supply in this country is pretty minimal.
Oh, you know, it's municipal.
Yeah, and provincial governments.
And provincial governments.
I will say that at time of recording, there was an announcement yesterday made here in Winnipeg that the government of Canada put $240 million into various contributions, low-cost repayable loans. They're intending to build, repair, and renew close to 4,000 homes and 105 different projects right across the province.
Yeah.
So it's certainly not something that government has stopped talking about. It's just no longer the focus.
Yeah, which is, I think that it's a great observation. I'm not sure why the conservatives who had made such great hay over housing have, it's not like I force myself to read all of the daily news releases from the Conservative Party headquarters. And it's, I'm going to need some like therapy by the end of the, you know, the campaign, but still it's not about housing. Crime is big.
Oh, crime.
And,
yeah.
And still carbon tax.
Okay. I don't mean to, you know, I keep talking about my travel. But
you're gonna.
I'm gonna talk about it, again. And this is an appeal to another sponsor. If anybody wants to send me flight credits,
good stuff.
But I just did some work recently in a place that I almost never go, which is Quebec, and so I spent some time in Quebec hotels, watching television there, and I am fascinated by the political advertising in Quebec that you don't see anywhere else.
It's nuts.
There is an entire conservative campaign taking place in Quebec that none of us know about. And it has to do with creating a rosy, family-based, holding hands with his wife, walking through fields, golden fields of wheat. But there was, I mean, like we're seeing I saw four versions of that commercial.
Yeah.
In Quebec, of Pierre Poilievre.
Yeah.
There is a move in by the conservatives to rosy up the Conservative Party, I think, the best they can. And maybe this happens every federal election. I just don't happen to be in Quebec for every federal election.
No.
But it is fascinating to see the political messaging on that side of Canada versus this side of Canada.
Yeah, it's always been thus. I mean, I was – one of the formative experiences of my journalism career was being in – Quebec in 95 for the Quebec referendum. I spent more time that year in Quebec than in Ottawa, where I was based. And one thing I remember was the night after Chrétien, this is right before the referendum, right before the big Canada rally in Montreal. Chrétien held a rally at the Verdun Arena, which was amazing. Like it was Chrétien at his best, right? And I went home that night, filed my story from the hotel. And then I watched some, you know, Télémétropole or TV5 or something like that. And, they were doing a completely francophone version of the Family Feud. The Guerre de Femme. And it was, no, but it was like, I watched this and I went, now at that time, this is before CBC English language developed their own cockamamie version of Family Feud for English Canada. Bad idea, CBC. But no, it was this was like done by private TV in Quebec. And it was at that time, if you needed evidence that Quebec was a distinct society, it was that they have their own Family Feud, for God's sakes.
You know, like, you know, that took a while to get to that point.
I walk a shaggy dog everywhere I go, man.
I was wondering where we're going to the Family Feud. But you know, that's why, you know, one thing that as we get beginning back and as we wrap up talk around the Liberal leadership campaign, by the time that we do our next podcast, we may have a federal Liberal leader to talk about. But Mark Carney's ability in French. I was watching the French debate, and of course, my French is decent, but certainly not fluent in any way. And even I could tell that he was struggling in French. Yeah. And watching his French performance and his English performance, it makes me wonder that, you know, for the Liberals to do well, they have to do well in Quebec.
They are doing better in Quebec.
Far better. Yeah. The challenge, of course, will be how well does the Bloc do? But the bigger maybe issue for thinking about this federal election campaign is what are the stories happening about Carney in Quebec? And we maybe get a barometer of that when the leadership becomes clear.
Yeah. I mean, it's having done a lot of work in Quebec as a with only a partial grasp of the language, like functional but partial, is that it really you never know. Like there are going to be nationalists – you know, who are going to be offended that he isn't more fluent. And there's also a lot of people, quite frankly, that really appreciate the effort, right? Like that. And so like the debate, he'll need to polish up, you know, he'll need to man up a little bit on his French. You know, I think, you know, quite frankly, though, there's a lot that's embedded now in the Conservative campaign, which is just not like Poilievre is not seen as the guy to confront Trump. He's no not. Way. And right now, like Quebec, like there's the federalism is surging, you know, federalist simplices are surging. So
sovereignty debates are the lowest they are in Quebec.
Yeah.
The anti-Trump sentiment in Quebec is palpable when you go there. And that all leads to a possibility that where we started our podcast for this week, which is what a turnaround. What a point in Canadian political history. Now, for those of you that are still in the cave, please continue to stay there. But if you want to come out here, it's sure interesting.
Yeah. It's maybe short periods of time.
Like, yeah, just come out for a brief foray, grab some berries, run back into the cave.
That's it. Berries and nuts and back into the cave. Let us know if you need supplies.
Quick shot of vitamin D.
That's right. Have somebody, download the podcast so you can listen to it if you can't get a Wi-Fi.
Can you imagine if we were the only source of somebody's news cycle? What a gift that would be for them.
That's one word for it.
God help them. God help them all. No. Thanks again to Curtis Brown. Thanks for the news with the new numbers. Thanks to everybody at the Free Press, Paul, Wendy, and everybody else.
Thanks everybody
who still concerned about the name of the podcast, but they put it. They keep uploading.
Subscribe to both of our newsletters now that we have newsletters absolutely to subscribe to, and I hope that you continue to support independent journalism, which is what the Free Press is all about.
The 100% Canadian Free Press and the 98.5% Canadian podcast.
just a hint of Irish.
And 100% Canadian CJNU.
Absolutely. There we go. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, I'll be back.